The 22nd Perek of Shabbos deals with various decrees that Chazal instituted to ensure people don't violate Isurei D'oraisa, and it also has various other inyanim, as we will see, as we, Yemir Tashem, go through the Perek. The first Mishnah says as follows, Chavis Shenishbara, if we have a barrel and it broke on Shabbos and it holds a lot of liquid, way more than we need on Shabbos, for example, it holds oil or wine, and we just need a little bit for Shabbos, but there's going to be a significant financial loss. Nonetheless, Chazal instituted, you can only save what you will need for that Shabbos and not more. The concern here is if we permit the individual to save a lot more, he's going to start running all around finding empty containers to fill it, and he very easily may come to carry them through a Reshus HaRabim in his quest to save all of the liquid that is oozing out of that barrel. So the Mishnah says as follows, Chavis, a barrel shenishbara, and it broke, Matzilin himenu mezon shalashudas, we are permitted to save the equal worth of three suudas, three meals worth of that good, of that liquid that would be necessary. This is talking about the beginning of the Shabbos. If the person already had one meal, it's going to be down to two meals that he can save. If he had already two meals of Shabbos, he can save only one meal. Similar to what we've seen in the past a few prokim ago when it came to saving food when there was a fire that broke out. And in addition, not only can he save for himself three meals, for Omer la'acherim, and he can say to others, Ba'u va'atzilu lachem, come and save for yourself also what your needs would be for Shabbos. Uvilvad shelo yispog. The important thing is that he doesn't come and use a sponge and sponge it up in order to soak the liquid, and there the concern is he may come to squeeze it out. Schita is prohibited on Shabbos, as we'll see right now, continuing on in that same concept, squeezing of juice, to juice a fruit on Shabbos is also prohibited. Now, we're going to actually divide up between different types of fruits that are juice, that are used for the juice, that are squeezed. Category number one are types of fruits that are often, or they're primary purpose is to squeeze them for their juice. An example would be grapes, which more often people have grape juice than the grapes themselves, and olives, very more often than people have olive oil, the juice of the olive, than the olives themselves. So that's category number one. Somebody who squeezes those types of fruits on Shabbos, that is Nisr D'oraisa. It falls under a tolda of the Isser of threshing, and it's called Mefarek. Mefarek is extracting, so we'd be extracting juice out of the fruit. So that would be an Isser D'oraisa. However, category number two are fruits that are only occasionally squeezed. Not always. Sometimes, yes, sometimes not. For example, pomegranates. We often eat pomegranates, but sometimes we also squeeze the pomegranate seeds to have pomegranate juice. Or berries. So those are prohibited to be squeezed on Shabbos Midoraisa. And fruits that are almost never juiced, that would not fall under the prohibition. So in our Mishnah, as we're about to get into this, we are talking about category number two, fruits that are occasionally squeezed, but it's not the norm for squeezing them. We're talking like the pomegranate category, that it would be an Isser D'Rabbanan if it is squeezed on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says as follows, the Tanakhama says, Ein sochtin es aperos lehotzi mehen mashkin. We are not permitted to sochet, that is to squeeze the fruits, in order to extract from them their juice, to juice them on Shabbos. That is a form of the malach of threshing, as we mentioned. The miyatsu me'atzman, however, even if they came out by themselves, or in addition, moreover, even if they came out by themselves and we didn't actively squeeze them, nonetheless, that juice is going to be prohibited. Asurin, that juice we are not allowed to have, even though we did not actively squeeze, because we may come to squeeze more juice, and that would be an Isser D'Rabbanan. Again, we're talking about category number two. That for sure is the deen category number one, where it's an Isser D'Oraisa to squeeze. For sure not. You cannot drink anything that will come out, even if you didn't actively squeeze. Now, the next Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Rabbi Yehuda, this is good of the view, it really depends. In this category number two, the Isser D'Rabbanan to squeeze it on Shabbos, but it came out by itself, it depends, why did you have that fruit? Im la'achalim, if you were storing that fruit to eat it, not to drink it, you weren't going to juice it, hayotze mehen mutar, if juice came out by itself from those fruits, it would be permitted to drink it, because I wasn't planning on juicing it anyway. We don't have the concern that I'm going to juice more. The im the mashkin, however, if I had that fruit, category number two fruit, and I was storing it in order to juice it in the future, I didn't have to juice it. It came out by itself on Shabbos. Also, I'm not allowed to drink it. can have it after Shabbos, you can have it to drink it on Shabbos, because I had that fruit in order to use it for mashkin, in order to juice it, the concern is I may come and juice it, juice additional, not only what came out by himself, but I may actively juice that fruit. Continuing in a similar vein, we're going to talk about honey that oozed out of a honeycomb on Shabbos by itself. I cannot actively squeeze it out of a honeycomb. I can't extract the honey. But how about if it came out by itself? So here it says, chalos devash. So the situation here is that somebody had crushed honeycombs from before Shabbos, siriskan me'erev Shabbos. So because he started crushing them and it continued, the honey continued coming out on Shabbos, v'yatsu me'atzman, and it continued coming, asurin, it is prohibited, because the concern of the Tama of this din is that I may come to extract even more. I may come to remove more honey. I see some same came out. I'm going to want to take more out. Rabbi Eliezer, Mati, Rabbi Eliezer says it's mutter. We're not concerned he's going to take out more honey. That is highly unlikely. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says that because I crushed it before Shabbos, it simply came out by itself on Shabbos, I would be permitted to have it. It's unlikely that somebody would come and extract more. An interesting question in halacha lamaisa, having grapefruit on Shabbos, if somebody wants to eat the grapefruit, but how do you eat the grapefruit? You have to cut it open, the juice oozes out, and you often use a spoon and you push on the fruit, and then inevitably juice squirts out of there, and that is like juicing on Shabbos. That is juicing on Shabbos, chito. So Rabbi Eliashiv was somewhat machmir on this. He gave certain ways that you had to cut the fruit. You wouldn't cut it on the normal way with the knife going vertically down, because then juice comes out. He wanted you to cut it with the fruit, cutting it vertically, so any juice that came out would stay within the grapefruit itself, and then he didn't want to use, Paskin, you shouldn't use a spoon to cup out, to dig out the fruit. You should actually cut it with a knife so it doesn't force it out. So he had certain requirements in order to permit eating of a grapefruit. There are other poskim, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach and Rav Menashe Kalein in his Mishnah Halachas, that are more lenient if the intention of the person eating is to not want to juice it, they want to eat the grapefruit. They were more makel on it, saying even though it's a psik resha, but my intention is not to juice it, my intention is to eat it as food, then they were lenient on eating the grapefruit on Shabbos. Mishnah Beis deals with various halachas as it deals with cooking on Shabbos, a very complicated area. The Mishnah on a high level is discussing something that has been cooked already before Shabbos. There's a concept of ein bishul achar bishul. If it's been cooked already, it's not going to be a violation of Shabbos if somebody effectively cooks it again, because it's already been cooked. So we're going to get into a little bit detail on those halachas. So the Mishnah says as follows, kol sheba bechamin me'erev Shabbos, anything literally that came into hot water, it means anything that has been cooked already before Shabbos, it would be permitted. Shorin oso bechamin b'Shabbos, it would be permitted to soak it in hot water on Shabbos. Again, ein bishul achar bishul, it's been cooked already, so there's not going to be a bishul, an effective cooking afterward. It's already cooked. A couple important requirements. This is not talking about that you can re-put it into a pot on the flame. It's talking about putting it into a pot that is not on the flame, and it also only applies to something that is yavesh, that is dry, not that is something that has a lot of juice and liquid around it. So continuing, v'chol shelo ba bechami merev Shabbos, anything that was not cooked before Shabbos, it wasn't cooked on Friday, it wasn't cooked before Shabbos started, it's not permitted to put it into that kli rishon, it's not permitted to put it onto the pot, certainly if it's on the fire, but even if it's been removed from the fire, but it is permitted, madichin oso bechamin b'Shabbos, you can simply rinse it off with hot water on Shabbos, for example, to take away some of the salt on top of it, something like that. But when here we're talking about only that it's permitted to rinse something that has not been cooked from a kli sheni. A kli sheni is a liquid that's held in a vessel that was not used on the fire. In other words, your primary pot is called a kli rishon that was on the fire. It was removed from the fire and poured into something else. That's a kli sheni. In such a situation, you can use that kli sheni to rinse off something, even if it hasn't been cooked, but that item cannot be soaked in boiling hot water because that is bishul, even if that kli is no longer on the fire. Now, continuing, there are certain times that even rinsing something is going to be prohibited if it hasn't been cooked, and it's talking about situations that it makes those items edible. So there are times that even just rinsing something with very hot water is going to make it edible. That's going to be sufficient. And accordingly, that would be considered cooking, bishul, on Shabbos. So even rinsing is prohibited. So the Mishnah says, chutz, when can we not even rinse with hot water? I mean, hamaliach hayashan. This is talking about a certain type of salted fish. It was salted for over a year, and all you needed to do was rinse it with boiling hot water, and then it was edible. Done. Vidagi meluchim ketanim, and small salted fish. There are some postgame, commentators that don't have this in the Mishnah. They don't have this gear, so they remove that. Pekulias ha-Hispanim, and what's Hispanim is Spain, Spanish sole, another type of fish. So all of those three would be problematic, even rinsing it with hot water. Shadachasan, Zohi Gemar Melachtan, because simply rinsing it is the completion of their preparation, making them edible on Shabbos. Mishnah Gimel discusses the opening up of containers and casks and barrels, for example, for food on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says as follows: if somebody has a barrel and he wants to open up it up to get to the food on a high level, something that is constructive is asur on Shabbos. Something that is destructive is not prohibited on deoraisa level, on a biblical level. But Chazal said even if something is destructive, it should not be done on Shabbos. It's an isur derabanan unless it is necessary for Shabbos. So something that's necessary for Shabbos is to get at the food. So if it's something that is done in a destructive way, indeed it may be mutter, but we have to get into the details on this. So shover avdam es hechavis lechol chimenu grogoros. It's permitted to break open a cask of dried figs. Somebody wants to eat some figs on Shabbos. It's permitted to break open that cask, ubilvaj lo yiskaven la'asos kli, as long as the intention is to not to make it into a kli. In other words, if somebody is going to do it in a destructive way and punch a hole in it, a really rough hole in the cask, that's going to be something that's destructive for the mitzvah need to get out the food. It's going to be permitted. But if he tries to make a very nice opening in that vessel, that is us, or that is going to be the Isra Makeh B'Patish, because in fact, beforehand, this was just a closed barrel. It wasn't really a functional kli, and now that somebody has made it into a nice opening, that is completing the making of the kli, so that's a violation of Makeh B'Patish. Now we're going to have a discussion of when we have a cask of wine. The way they used to steal it is they used to have a stopper at the top, and how they used to seal it, they had that barrel of wine, and they used to mold a clay stopper on the opening of the cask. So they had like a mouth of the cask, and there they sealed it. It would be roughly a little bit similar to the corks we have nowadays, but the cork we pop in and out, but here it was a clay stopper at the top, and there are different ways to use it. The normal way to open up that barrel of wine was to take the whole stopper out, so to remove it, that would be mutter. Our Mishnah is talking about when they did a couple other things. Either they wanted to make a hole in that stopper, similar to making a hole in a cork, but it wasn't made of cork, it was made of clay. So to make a hole into the actual stopper and still instead of removing the whole thing, or if they didn't want to do that, they wanted to leave the stopper intact, but to make a hole on the side of the stopper. So well, now that's our discussion. Ve'enokfin megufa shel chavis, is not permitted to make that hole in the stopper that was closing up the top of the cask. That is indeed problematic, because you are creating an opening in it. So that would be Asar, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Vechachamim Atirin Mir Chachamim. Chachamim were of the view that it's mutter to do that because that's such an unusual way to open up a barrel of wine. The normal way is to remove the whole stopper, and you just want to punch a little hole in that clay. So according to Chachamim, that is indeed mutter because that's unusual. However, even according to the Chachamim, who permit making that hole in the stopper, in the head of the stopper itself, lo yikven amitzida, they agree that it's not permitted to make a hole in the side of the stopper because that is a normal way. It's a standard procedure to punch a hole and open up somebody's cask like that. The Mishnah now discusses how about sealing up a hole if you opened up the hole in the cask if you have it in the body of the cask or even in the head of the cask, v'im haisa nekuva, if you have a hole and you want to seal it up in order to preserve the wine on the inside, lo yiten aleha sha'ava, it is not permitted to put wax over that hole to seal it. Why? Mibnei shehu memareach, because that is usur on Shabbos, that is smoothing, that's the malacha of smoothing on Shabbos. It's among the av malachas, memachek is what was done in the Mishkan to scrape off the hair of a hide in order to make it smooth. So that's similar to here. We would be smoothing out that wax, and that is problematic. And then to buttress that, the Mishnah continues and says as follows: Amar Rabbi Yehuda, there was a story, an incident that occurred along these lines. Maaseh ba lifnei Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, there was an occurrence that came in front of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ba'arav, in the place of Arav, that somebody had sealed up a hole of a barrel with wax, as we just said, is prohibited. The Amar, and he says, Choshishani lo mechatas, I am concerned he may have violated an Isser Doraisa, he may have to bring a Korban Chatas. Now, what we've been discussing here, at least in the Reish, is opening up barrels and the like on Shabbos, and a very similar, if not the same concept that we have, is opening up of cans. We have these metal cans to open up if somebody wants hearts of palm or corn, or if they have pickles in a can and they want to get it open on Shabbos, is that permitted? So indeed, there are some poskim that are of the view that it is prohibited. This is not soter. When you open up the can, the can before you open it is not a kli because it's totally enclosed. It's only when you have a hole in it that you violate the isser of bonus. So by opening up the can, that is a bonus that is building. The Chazon Ish indeed was machmir on this, not to open cans on Shabbos. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach is brought in Shira Shmira Shabbos Kehilchaza Debazesh Mishana et Shimush HaKli, that you, when we open up a can, we are changing its use on Shabbos. Now it can be used to put things in and take them out. So that's making a kli on Shabbos. However, nonetheless, he says that it's prohibited. Davka kasha miskaven hishtamesh bekufsa gam achre shosi etza ocha mitocha. The prohibition is if you're intending to use that kli, that container, that can, after you've opened it up. However, if you're intending to immediately take the contents out and not use it thereafter, then we're not making a kli because we're just discarding that kli, that item, and accordingly it's just garbage. So there he was lenient on it. We have to immediately take the contents out of that can in order to use it. Rav Eliashiv was actually more machmir on this, and he says that bidyevid lechatchila, you have to open it before Shabbos. If you didn't, this is really a bidyevid situation. Still, you cannot open. What you would have to do is on the other underside of the kli, on one of the sides, you would have to puncture a small hole in it so that when you open it on the opposite side, it is no longer usable at all because it has a hole in the bottom. So indeed, that is what many people do. As far as I know, on Shabbos, if they need to open a kli, but Rav Eliashiv says it's only bidyevid. It should have opened before Shabbos. But if you didn't, then puncture a small hole on one side, open it from the other side, and then it's not a functional kli. Take everything out immediately. It's not usable anyway. Mishnah Dalet discusses certain types of warming and cooling of food that is actually permitted on Shabbos. The Mishnah brings three examples. Nos Nin Tashel is permitted to put something that is cooked. It's talking about you have something that is cooked in a pot. Lesoch Habor, it's permitted to put it into a cool pit on Shabbos, v'shvil sheyehe shamur, in order that it be protected and then not become spoiled in the sun, for example. And the concern here would be that if you're putting something into a pit, we may come to straighten out the walls or an area so that pot can sit, and maybe it's a violation of bona building on Shabbos. We're not concerned. It's indeed permitted. V'esamayim hayafin, it's permitted to put a container, for example, a pitcher of water, drinkable water, b'raim, into a pond or whatever, a puddle of bad water, feels she itsanu, in order to cool down the drinkable water. So that's not a problem. No iser involved there. And in addition, third, et hatsonen bechama, it's permitted to put cold water or cool water into the sun, bishvel sheyichamu, so that the sun can heat up that water. No problem. There's no ash here. And there's also nothing that's been heated by the sun. If something was heated by the sun itself, and then we use that heat, that could be problematic. But just putting something in the sun is not going to be problematic. Then now the Mishnah is going to continue discussing various related issues. Another halacha as it relates to heating things in the sun. Misha nashru chelav baderech b'mayim. Somebody who his outer clothing either fell into the water or he tripped and went into the water. Now of his clothing or even one piece of his clothing is sopping wet. So that's Caleb is talking about his clothing, but Derechal in the way, but Mayim Mehalech Ben is permitted to continue walking in those soaking clothing, Ve'eino Choshes, and there's no concern. The Mishnah doesn't say what the concern may be, so there are two possibilities here. Number one, it's like a Marasayan. People may see him, not like it is a Marasayan. People may see him, see wet clothing, and they may think he washed them on Shabbos. So the Mishnah is telling us we're not concerned about that. And another possibility is as he walks with these very drenched clothing, there can be a problem, a schita, that he's going to be indirectly pushing the water out, wringing out the water, not on purpose, but as he goes along. For example, his socks are all wet, and each time he walks, he squirts some water out of them. So the Mishnah is saying that that's not a problem. Higia lechatzar hachitzona, if you get to the chatzar, the outer courtyard, in other words, you got to the city now. You got to the outskirts of the city, and there's a place that you can safely leave your clothing. For example, you have a guard tower there. Hey, higia lechatzar hachitzona shotchan b'chama, you take off the clothing, and literally, you can put them out to dry. That's the connection to the race of the Mishnah. You can spread them out in the sun to dry. But don't do it in a way that everyone will see it. In other words, put it in back of the watchtower. Put it in back of the outer house there so people can't see it. Because of the Marasayan, people will think that you washed them on Shabbos. Now, truth be told, we don't paskin like this Mishnah. There's an important klal that's brought in Shas of something that is a problem of Marasayan. It applies a filu. So if Chazal said there's a problem of Marasayan, people may look and think you did something wrong even though you didn't. Nonetheless, that prohibition is going to apply whether people can see you or not. Afila bechedre chadorim means even if you are in your innermost chamber and no one can see you, the prohibition still applies. So it would be problematic to hang up that clothing whether people can see it or even in the back whether people cannot see it. Some interesting halacha lemaisa when it comes to these issues. Somebody, we've mentioned somebody who's going along and he has very wet clothing. This can happen. You step into a huge puddle and your clothing is really wet. So your socks are really, really wet. Is there a problem continuing to walk with them? Because every time you take a step, you're doing schita. You're pushing the water out of those socks. So lemaisa, it's brought by the Eshel Avram B'Tosh, another poskim, that indeed this would not be a problem if this is the only clothing you have. If you have other clothing, change. But if these are the only set of socks or other clothing that you have, this is schita kalach hayad in an indirect way. This is not the normal way to wash clothing or to do schita. And in addition, if you think about it, each time you walk, you push it out, you take a step down, but when you lift your foot up, the water is going right back into the sock. So when you step down, you push the water out, it goes right back, so it's going in and out. So that's a very interesting halacha lemaisa in this regard. Another interesting point, when it comes to, there's an interesting question, Hatola Begadav, when somebody who wants to hang up his clothing, for example, he schwitz through his undershirt, and it's all wet. Now, is he permitted to hang it up, or do we have this concern of Marasayan that people are going to see it and think that he washed it on Shabbos? So, Rav Shlomo Zohar ben Auerbach has brought in Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa that if you hang it up in the normal place that you hang your clothing, regardless, for example, when you take off your Shabbos clothing and you hang it on your chair, you hang it in your bathroom, and you're just hanging your wet clothing, your schwitzed undershirt, your shirt, in the same place that you would normally hang your other clothing. Accordingly, he was lenient, saying there's not going to be a problem, Amar Zion, because you hang your clothing in such an area regardless. Mishnah Hay discusses somebody who bathed on Shabbos, whether it was permitted or not. There are many restrictions on our bathing on Shabbos, but somebody who bathed, he did it nonetheless. Harochets b'mei me'ara, somebody who bathed either in a cave, that's water that was heated by man before Shabbos, or b'mei teveria, or naturally heated springs. Either way, v'nistapag afilu be'eser alontios, and he dried himself, even if he dried himself with 10 different towels. In other words, the later towels, they're not wet at all. Nonetheless, Chazal decreed lo yivim biyado. He's not permitted to take them back with him because we are concerned he may come to squeeze them out. And this is the case, even if some of them are certainly dry, but Nonetheless, lo plug, Chazal instituted, don't bring those towels back, because you may come and squeeze them whether the gzera applies or not. It applies to the first one, second one, but not to the later ones. It doesn't matter. It's prohibited. Aval, asara b'nei adam, however, if we have 10 people, they went together, mistapkim ba'alontis achas, and all they had was one towel. So they shared this one towel, 10 people, and they wiped up their pneihem, yadeim v'ragleim, their faces, their hands, their legs. In other words, those are, it's a soaking towel. Nonetheless, because it's more than one person, here we're talking about 10 people, and mevin osa biyadan, it's permitted for them to carry it in because they are going to act as a shomer, watching each other, making sure nobody squeezes out that towel. Now, lemaisa, it's very interesting to note that we don't paskin like this concern. In other words, I'll just read the lashon of Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch paskin zedor ha-chaim siman shin alef mistapek adam ba'alontis, if somebody dried himself with the towel after washing himself, mevia mi, it's permitted for him to bring it back with him. We don't have this concern. He may come to do schita. And the maisa we see in the streets of Yerushalayim, people go to the mikvah before davening on Shabbos morning. And indeed, we see them walking with their towels back from the mikvah, not having this concern that they may do schita on those towels. Mishnah Vav discusses various treatments of the body on Shabbos. The Mishnah says as follows, Sachin, which means we can anoint the body for pleasure on Shabbos, Umimash machine, we can also take a light massage on Shabbos for pleasurable reasons. The Mishnah has Bivnei Ma'ayin, limiting it to the stomach, that we could apply oil and we can take the massage on the stomach, but many of the poskim don't goreis that. They remove the words b'bnei ma'ayan, that these concepts apply to the whole body, that it's permitted to apply oil to the body, it's permitted to take a light massage for pleasure purposes, however not for refuah purposes, not for healing purposes. As we mentioned in the past, somebody who has simple aches and pains but is not so sick that he needs to get into bed, refuah is forbidden rabbinically. Only if somebody is really not feeling well and has to get into bed because of it would we permit refuah. Just continuing also on another important point here is when we permit this light massage and we permit the anointing of the oil, it has to be done b'shinoi in an unusual way. Otherwise, this is classified as an uvda d'chol, that's a weekday activity, and would not be permitted. Now, the Mishnah does continue. Avolo mis'amlin, we said you can take a light massage, but not a deep tissue massage. It can't be a vigorous massage that the person receiving it is really going to have a deep massage. That it would not be acceptable. Or also velomi skardina, we don't scrape the skin. That is also, both of those are an uvde dechol, a deep tissue massage, and scraping the skin to exfoliate or whatever it may be, those would be an uvde dechol. And yordim the kordima. Kordima was a valley in which there were pools there, and it was very slippery area. There are actually different explanations. We'll just give one of them. And the concern here is because it was slippery and steep, that somebody could easily slip and would get all wet. And the concern is that the person may come to wring out the clothing. So that is a concern of schita. And accordingly, don't go into that area, that go down to the Kordima area, that valley, because in all likelihood, somebody will slip and could come to do schita of those clothing. The Mishnah account now continues. Other various aspects of refuah vein osin, apis tevizin, we also cannot take a potion that would cause us to vomit, taking medicine that would cause a vomit, that is doma lerefuah, it's similar to refuah. Continuing, vein ma'atzfin esakatan, if we have a child and we need to straighten out his bones, straighten out his vertebrae, that is doma labona, it's similar to building, and accordingly it should not be done on Shabbos. The exception would be if he was just born first day, this is only an Isser Derabanan, so whatever is necessary for the health of that child, not whatever, but this would be necessary for the health of the child, this would be permitted, but thereafter would not be permitted. Vein machzirin es hashever, now we're going to talk about refuah, when somebody has a broken bone on Shabbos, it's not permitted to set a broken bone on Shabbos, that is too much like refuah, that is an act to refuah. Now, lemaisa, we don't paskin like this Mishnah. We do paskin that it is permitted to set a broken bone on Shabbos. That would be an Isser Derabanan, which we matir because, and the Ritva explains this, if it's not done immediately, another poskim explain as well, the entire limb could be endangered because of that. So because it's only a Derabanan, we would, for the tzorach of that limb, for that aver, we would be permitted indeed to set that bone on Shabbos. Mishenifraka yado v'raglo, somebody has a dislocated arm or leg, it comes out of a place, lo yisrefem bitzonen, it would not be permitted to rub them vigorously with cold water. It's clear that what that treatment would be for healing purposes, and we don't want to give off that view that we're healing on Shabbos. However, there may be another way to get at it. Aval rochetz hu kedarko, it's permitted to wash in a permitted way. In other words, in a normal way, like the entire body with cold water, whatever it may be. Vim nistrap, and if memele, if it does happen that there's a refuah of that hand or leg that slipped out of place, that became dislocated, that is totally okay, as long as we're not giving off the impression of doing a specific refuah on Shabbos. One interesting note in this, when we're talking about slipping out of arms and legs, dislocating, actually an interesting shaila is somebody who has dentures permanently installed or a dental implant, and it comes out on Shabbos. Obviously, you need professional care after Shabbos, but is it permitted to temporarily put it back into place to enable the person to eat on Shabbos, to assist that? So Rav Moshe Feinstein had that question. I don't know if he was talking about the actual dental implants we have today, because it was written a few decades ago, but he was talking about some sort of implant, denture type of thing that was typically inserted on a permanent basis, and it came out. And he says here there's no refuah going on because it's simply temporary, there's not refuah on Shabbos. And also all these concerns that we've seen in our Mishnah isn't about tikkun gavra, that we're being metaken the person himself, and there's no tikkun here really, which just being inserted to enable the person to eat on Shabbos. Now it's a temporary fix, not permanent. And accordingly, Rav Moshe Feinstein said there would be no problem with this.